half an hour.
Was half an hour.
Yeah. Before we start recording. A good sister chatting, catching up time.
Yeah.
Speaking of sister films that I need to rewatch, A League of Their Own, 1992.
Sorry, what was that? Do you want to do an intro first? Because that last.
Oh, right. I'm Jessie.
Hi, this is Helen.
And we're Asian Bitches Down Under. We're two sisters talking about things that affect Asian women, both here in Australia and abroad.
Mm-hmm.
We're both from Taiwan. Ethnically, we're Taiwanese women. And, you know, we were talking about a lot of stuff, but also probably one of my favorite movies from the 90s, A League of Their Own from 1992. Which I need to rewatch. Perhaps I shared this film. Yeah, baseball film.
Okay.
I shared this film. It was a very spiritual connecting kind of film I shared with my other sister, Lisa. We loved it so much. Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, Rosie O'Donnell, Madonna. Just spectacular cast.
Iconic females back in the
90s. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a queer film as well, but it's a movie about sisterhood, which I just can't get enough of.
What I remember from that film is that how much Tom Hanks, the anger that he had.
Yeah, he's great.
Throughout the whole movie.
He's really, he's terrific in it. He's such a grouchy, angry man.
Yeah.
The manager of the baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Well, we will go into, I'll go into more detail once I watch it again. I haven't been able to rewatch it, but it just, you know, has been on my mind while I go through my 90s movies.
Yes.
For this year, a goal of mine. The latest being Sister Act 2, which I watched a couple of days ago. Unfortunately, doesn't hold up to the magic of Sister Act, the original.
Yeah, I remember even vision last week.
Even though the songs are just as good, but a lot of things have been happening this week. Helen, do you want to kick things off with what's happened on your end?
Oh, okay. I think I want to share our experience of going to Frida Kahlo's exhibition at Barangaroo.
You took your daughter there.
Yeah, I took my daughter there last Saturday and with our friend who was visiting from New Zealand. Shout out to Amanda. Great chat, and we had a catch up over lunch and went to see the exhibition. It's quite, I don't know how to explain it, but it's not your usual sort of art exhibition. It's more of a sensory experience.
Mm.
Because Amanda went to the one that is with Van Gogh, and she said it's pretty similar to that one, whereas you have a lot of projections of pictures, sounds, videos across the four walls in the really huge room.
Mm.
And you sit there and kind of immerse yourself into that kind of lighting and the videos to kind of experience what Frida Kahlo as a person and goes, you know, you kind of following the chronological of her life from her young self, how she experienced through the car accident, and she became, you know, a person with disability, and her art evolves, and a lot of stories about her love life as well.
Mm, with married to Diego, what's his face?
Yeah, Diego
Rivera or something?
Yeah, Riverina. I think, I can't remember. Yeah, Diego, his surname is definitely Diego.
Oh, right. Yeah, like, just the misogynist, basically. That's all you need to say. Well, wasn't he like a C-U-N-T to her?
Oh, I think their relationship is quite complicated because they were in and out of marriage for a couple of times, and they had both had affairs to some other people themselves. Yeah.
Right.
But the whole exhibition was quite interesting. You go through a corridor listed with her life
chronology.
Yeah, of her life.
Yeah.
Birth, her parents, her family, and then all the way through her artistic discovery outside of her home country in US and also in France, I believe.
Mm.
Yeah, and you also see some of other artists' inspired works that is based on the idea of how Frida Kahlo creates her art. And there's also a VR station where you put on, you know, the goggles and the headphone, and you kind of feel like you're in the world of Frida Kahlo's artworks. Yeah, so it's a very modern, very different to the usual art gallery experience. I don't know if I like it or I hate it. Like, I was kind of expecting to see some of her artworks.
Yeah.
I was not expecting watching a projection of videos, but to the point that those it was done very, very well, because the final room that you entered, it's a huge, I'll say it's almost like a 2 tennis court size. You have people sitting in the middle in the little stools, and then some people are sitting on the floor, some people are even lying down, because the video projection goes across the 4 walls around you, and also on the floor as well. So it feels quite immersive, and the music was very, very good. I mean, of course, you know, Latino music, that all sounds, if it needs to sound really sad, it sounds really depressive, and if it sounds very happy, it sounds very, it's a very direct, I almost feel like the Latino sort of culture, they're very direct in trying to express their feelings. There's a term in Chinese that trying to describe someone who is very direct about their emotion, as in they dare to love and they dare to hate.
What is that? How do you say it?
敢爱敢恨. Yeah, so they're not ambiguous about their feelings at all.
As in
they're fiery when they're in love, and they're also very fiery when they, you know, when they hate each other.
Yeah.
I think it kind of is like similar to expression of like tango. You know, the powerful dance movements.
Yeah, flamingos.
Your flamingos, yeah. So it's very direct expression of emotion, I think. So, yeah, so that's my experience of going to Frida Kahlo.
How much was it?
Slightly expensive over the weekend. I think it was $49 for an adult.
Yeah.
But, that, you know, if anyone who's interested, it's at Barangaroo, Sydney. Yeah, go and check it out.
It reminds me of a couple of years ago, I think in 2020, there was a Van Gogh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Immersive show.
Yeah, that's,
oh, you said that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Did you go see that?
I didn't see it. I didn't go and see that, but yeah, I vaguely remember that you didn't like it.
Yeah, I went to see it. It was basically, it was art, but like art in a way that is like everything that a true artist would hate. Like, I think if anyone at Van Gogh saw what happened to his art and how it was like, basically like projected onto the screen with lush music for like 45 minutes, a top, bottom, every single wall, three-dimensional. It was like art trying to be sold to like a five-year-old. It was like trying to make
it to a five-year-old.
It's just like,
it does make it more excessive.
Yeah, it's just, it cheapens the art, I think, honestly. I mean, it wasn't not enjoyable. It was just like a very kind of commercial way to capitalize on, you know, art. But that was like $50. That was extraordinary, like totally exorbitant amount of money just for like watching slides, basically. You're watching slides.
Was that the only, you know?
That was the only thing, yeah. That was the only thing. And I cannot believe how popular it was.
Okay. With the Frida Kahlo one, there's different rooms with different like sensory experience. So there's also a room where you can sit down and color in a picture of Frida Kahlo and then project it onto the wall. A lot of kids were doing that. We didn't because there was too many people. And there was photo booth as well, where you go into the booth, the picture of you, and then some kind of, I don't know, maybe AI or some kind of software application.
It makes you
make your portrait into like a Frida Kahlo inspired.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the ones of
it. I sent it to
very
you.
Cute. Yeah. Did you do one yourself?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you should send it.
I'll send it to you later. Yeah. But that was interesting. Yeah,
awesome. We hung it. My partner took me to the Sydney Observatory night tours. Mm-hmm. Which has finally opened up for those who are budding fans of the night sky and interested in astronomy, and you live in Sydney. It's now open after like a two and a half year kind of closure.
Were they renovating or upgrading or something?
Yeah, I think they were upgrading during COVID or something. Yeah, their excuse or whatever. I don't know. But it was really delightful. We looked through two different telescopes, learned about the observatory hill and about the actual observatory and what, and, you know, how it was built, who lived there hundreds of years ago. And, you know, I love, there's nothing more I love than hearing a really interesting tour guide talk about history and like situate us, like situate the people in, you know, hundreds of years ago. Like, I love walking tours. It's the most, like, especially when you have an awesome tour guide. Yes. It's so great. It's like the most immersive and enthralling kind of learning that I like doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know you don't like talking about this, but I do want to just mention Valentine's Day. He came home with a bouquet of flowers, which was very sweet. Okay. Uh-huh. And then he told me that the whole florist was, there was a line.
Okay.
And everyone in the line was a guy.
Yeah.
And then I felt bad. Like, I felt bad. I felt like I was like, it was basically, I was like, oh, this is like, Valentine's Day is basically a wedding for women, you know?
Yeah, it's like short-lived.
It's just like, yeah. If it's only men lining up to, you know, gift their partners, female partners, I'm assuming, flowers, it means like Valentine's Day has been made up to, you know, make women feel like the center of attention for one day.
Yeah, it's
in the way that a wedding
is exactly the same symbolism as Mother's Day.
Right. But the thing is, there's also Father's Day.
Yeah, but it also feels like that people expect, okay, we're generally talking about heterosexual couples here. Couples in the same-sex relationship will probably feel the same as well. But there's also give and take in the relationship, and it always feels like that Valentine's Day, the guys has to get the flowers. Like you said, it almost feels like a wedding.
Yeah, in the way that a guy has to propose.
Yeah, and the woman is expected to, I don't know, prepare a nice meal or make a cake.
Yeah.
And then get ready for sex at the end of the night or something like that.
Yeah.
It's almost made into a routine that is, you need to
perform.
You need to perform. Yeah, exactly. I remember seeing Clementine Ford, which we will talk about her again later on our episode. I remember seeing Clementine Ford's story on Valentine's Day. She said that, what is it with the idea of giving flowers? Oh, I lost my train of thought. I'm pretty sure that I remember what she was saying on the day of the Valentine's. She said that a guy giving the flower, and she just doesn't, I think it's along the line of her saying that it's, oh yeah, I remember now. She said that she's seen a lot of influencers, female influencers, would post on Valentine's Day saying
pictures of their stuff flowers, like partners,
whatever, doing. Okay,
yeah.
Whatever that they received, and saying that, oh, the love of my life gave me this, blah, 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 thank you. But she said that she never seen a guy does it.
Yeah.
Never seen a guy who either influenced or anyone posting on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
You know, shouting out their love confession to their partner.
Yeah. Because, like, why would a guy do that? Exactly. It's not manly, right? That's what the patriarchy has taught them.
Yeah, that's right. Let's take a do you have anything else?
Yeah, quick break. And we'll come back and launch into the crux of our conversation this episode, led by Helen.
We'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. So this week I would like to discuss two pieces of article on marriage in China and birth rate in South Korea today. So the first piece of article, which is the guest essay published in New York Times, I believe it was in January this year, which is titled Women in South Korea Are on Strike Against Being Baby Making Machines. So according to New York Times, this is not actually the first time that the media outlet has published a piece on birth rate issues of South Korea. There were three news articles similar to this essay on South Korea last year, and it seems like that the birth rate of South Korea is on a steady decline, which is very much similar across the world. But you know, South Korea is also almost at the very threatening situation.
This really? Is wow.
Yes, yeah. So in this essay, the writer expressed that a 2022 survey found that more women than men, 65% versus 48%, don't want children. For 3 years, sorry, I just paused for.
Wait. What did your dog just do?
My dog was just having a dream. He's wiggling his tail while he's asleep. Okay, so for 3 years in a row, the country has recorded the lowest fertility rate in the world, with women of reproductive age having fewer than one child on average. Daycare centers and kindergartens are being converted into nursing homes.
Wow.
Obstetrician clinics are closing and funeral parlors are opening.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, if you don't produce kids, obviously that the daycare and kindergartens are going to run out.
That's so fascinating. You'd never, I feel like in Australia, people are still having a lot of kids.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. So young Koreans have well documented reason not to start a family, including the staggering cost of raising children, unaffordable homes, lousy job prospects, and soul crushing work hours. But for women in particular, who are fed up with this traditionalist society's impossible expectation of mother, so they're quitting. Yeah, like you said, I think Australia, we have less children, but we are not
our closing childcare centers. Yeah. I thought that childcare centers still are so kind of, it's hard to get your child enrolled and all that.
There's a lack of supply of childcare centers.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of places in especially metropolitan areas where childcare centers can call up to $150 a day because the places are scarce.
Yeah,
so it doesn't really help when you have a misogynistic
society.
A society and also a president itself who was blaming feminism of blocking the healthy relationship between men and women to be a family.
Oh my gosh, she has no idea what she's talking about.
Yeah, so
or he. Who is the president?
He, I think it's a he. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think in one of our episodes before, we discussed our South Korean pregnancy guidelines. The one of the city council advised women to arrange clean underwear for their husband before they go into labor.
Oh my god!
And also, they have to take responsibilities of a lot of traditional celebrations. For example, this is called in Korean. It's called Chuseok, the mid-autumn, where we say Jongchul. Mm-hmm. Autumn festival, and a lot of most of the married women are settled with lion's share of chores and childcare. Demands of the new mothers are incredible, so many of them, you know, gave up professional ambitions. And on top of that, the a lot of workplaces in South Korea are very discriminative.
Sexist.
Against women, especially who are married.
How is that related to your next news item about China?
I think it's also people are choosing not to get married and not to have kids. I think partially is because of the financial strain, but I think mostly as a woman in both South Korea and in China is because that the man hasn't progressed enough as what the woman has in the past decades. And also the change of how the government supports women in their own society, because the article in New York Times, the author concludes that in comparison with other nations that push for strong gender equality, countries with cooperative fathers and good family policies like Sweden, or that they recognize diverse companionship like France, have been more successful in stabilizing or even pumping up the birth.
Mm.
You need to have a certain good structure of support, not just for families. It needs to be supports for women, and also the whole infrastructure that is set up for mothers to encourage women to choose to have kids.
Mm.
Yeah, if you
that
don't
makes
have,
sense.
Yeah, you don't have a good structure of maternal leave, you don't have a good structure of return to work programs, or you have unfair dismissals.
Mm. And
obviously women would choose not to have kids, because it seems like once you have a baby, everything is becomes very negative.
Mm.
For you, it's like, you know, we early on when we started our podcast, one of the biggest South Korean novel was the
1982.
So even, you know, if you haven't read that book, you might have watched the movie. Mothers in South Korea has been called like a mother worm or something like that. And there's a very high tendency of women who chooses not to become like that, because how the society is treating the woman with kids.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, so
and I guess across the ocean, that in China, women are now also refusing to get married, like you said.
Yeah. So on the second article that I want to mention today is from South China Morning Post, titled "Getting Married Is Like Going to Hell."
Wow. Okay.
More young Chinese.
It's that bad.
Why are more young Chinese are falling out of love time than not? So a report of declining marriage rate has started to trend in over New Year, the Lunar New Year holiday, a time of for a lot of people visiting their families. So social media users said that they were put off by high cost of marriage and the increasing difficulties of getting divorced. So what happens is that traditionally, during Lunar New Year, people work outside of their hometowns, mainly in, you know, major cities like Beijing or Shanghai. They'll return to their home for celebrations, and their parents would usually expect them to return home with either a very big red pocket or a potential partner for marriage. However, in recent years, as society progresses, the idea of family institutions has shifted. So with ever increasing like financial pressure and also the autonomy of self-awareness of the world, many people came to the realization that there is no need to get married. So I think it might be a generational thing, and also class idea. Mm. Oh, and I feel like rural people who are still living in rural country places will still follow the traditional idea of your 25, you're at the reproductive peak, then you get married, have kids.
Mm. Mm.
Whereas a lot of highly educated people, especially women, are choosing not to get married now. I think it's kind of shifting the idea of what we talked about again in our previous episode about the leftover woman.
Yeah.
I think there it's gradually to shift the idea that you don't need to get married.
Which is great.
Yeah, which is great. Yeah. Everything I see that my conclusion about these two news articles is that capitalism and patriarchy kind of created this huge illusion for women to fall into, become the submissive citizen of the society.
Mm.
Like what we talked about last week, you know, the wedding is probably the first trick, and then it comes with motherhood.
Yeah.
It's never been called parenthood. It's always motherhood being labeled as this a very glamorous term, but in fact that it is not. But making those two live events, the society trying to make those two live events as equal to happiness.
Yeah.
And it's a false advertisement for many people who seek this so-called fake happiness, I think. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I'm not saying that becoming married or becoming a mother isn't happiness, but the marketing skill of capitalism and patriarchy make them look like you must obtain those to be happy. And I believe a lot of women do believe that. And also, you know, this again, it's a social expectation that you, for women, that you need to be married and have kids, which to me is just a bunch of BS.
Looking around your social circle, are most of your friends married?
Yes. And I would say nearly half of them are divorced.
So they're not married anymore? They're
not married.
But they have been married.
They chose marriage before.
Yeah. Well, that fits in with the statistics, the loose statistics that, you know, have been going around for decades, about 50% of marriages ended in divorce and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I think I have two close friends who are married out of like 15 people that I am really close to.
Mm-hmm.
So like, people around me are not married. It's kind of like an aberration in my social circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that might change, I guess, you know, in the next few years.
Yeah, but your social group and your friendship groups are very different to mine, I believe. Obviously, mine are a lot more older, and also most of them came from
traditional backgrounds.
Yeah, very traditional backgrounds.
Yeah.
Very similar. They had parents like our parents who are expect their children to be married before 30, to have kids, to have a house, a career. They all want those. But compared to your social group, it will be a bit different, wouldn't it? Because I have friends whose parents are not immigrants, or maybe like subsequent generations of immigrants. Compared to newly immigrants, I think a lot of newly immigrants still have a lot of, they still grapple to that kind of idea that you need to have your own kid to have your roots in this place.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's the idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes there's nothing more, like, I know I've said this so many times to you, but there's nothing less interesting to me than marriage.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I cannot imagine, like, I would rather, do anything else. And not because I don't love my partner, obviously, but like, nothing about it appeals to me. Maybe like the only thing that appeals to me only, perhaps, is the access to opportunities I will get only because of the way the fucked up structure of the society works. So just a quick example, if we wanted to adopt children, for instance, a lot of charity agencies don't allow unmarried couples to adopt. So you know, we would only do it for those kind of reasons.
Because it's not that hard to get married. You just go and pay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, get witness and sign it up.
Yeah, it does
not signify how well that the couple's relationship is or is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Hi there. If you're new to our show, thanks for tuning in into our program, and we hope you will stay with us for a very long time. And if you are a regular listener, we're forever grateful for your continuous support throughout this period of uncertainty. It has really helped this podcast to gain a great exposure, as our mission is to center the perspectives of people who look like us, who are marginalized historically to the sideline of conversation. So if you haven't already, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on Omni, Apple, Google, or Spotify, and leave a rating and review. And of course, as a small podcast program, we rely on listeners' support to continue this work. Please do check out our Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation in order for us to continue to advocate the intersectionality in the podcast industry.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, I want to wrap up today's conversation with a funny and hilarious, oh my gosh. This is an article, guys, published in the Guardian. Mm-hmm. And it was written by a kind of fashion / culture columnist called Morwenna Ferrier. That's her name, Morwenna Ferrier. And I came across Morwenna actually a couple of days prior to her publication of this piece. She had written a piece about Rihanna's Super Bowl halftime show, in which she didn't really give anything interesting, to be honest. But this article, Helen and I are going to deconstruct and then also add in the hilarious Clementine Ford's take on it. Yes. Is a column called My Most Romantic Moment. And it was, you know, published in conjunction with Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. It came out at the end of Valentine's Day, our time. I believe this woman lives in the UK. So maybe that's why it has the date of like February 14th, 11:30 p.m. So it must have come out early in the morning their time. But the headline of this piece is My Most Romantic Moment. I had just given birth and my boyfriend made me a perfect bowl of pasta. Okay, where do we start? Basically, I'll give you a wrap-up of her very short piece. She talks about having just had her son. Mm-hmm. And then basically saying that she had, this is the line she uses, much like having the baby, I had already done the hard part myself. So she had made the actual pasta. Mm-hmm. She cooked it and then she put it in, she wasn't able to finish it, but she made it and then she gave birth to her kid. And then basically her boyfriend, she says, it was my boyfriend who took out the sauce out of the freezer at around 2 a.m. and defrosted it. And then this is the thing that she is most impressed with. She said, and then he carefully cut the linguine into little pieces with a pair of hair scissors. And this is her next line, and this is crucial. I hadn't asked him to cut the pasta into pieces. He just somehow knew how to do it. Wow. And so I actually came across this article thanks to Clementine Ford, who did one of her stories about it. And she basically linked the story and she said, her deadpan humor is hilarious. She said, this woman has written a Guardian article about the amazing work of her boyfriend being able to defrost food for her while she just gave birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was, oh my God, I was just like, it was just hilarious. And you know, I have a take. And basically, Clementine Ford's like, how does this like ridiculously basic, less than basic, I guess, act of defrosting sauce, how does this warrant a whole Guardian article about like this woman's most romantic moment? Mm. I have a take on that. But before I, you know, give you my take, Helen, what did you think? What were your first reactions to this?
I laughed my head off when I was looking at Clementine's response on her story.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that woman has been kind of forced to perceive small gestures of kindness and they should be content with the bare minimum.
Yeah.
You know, and also I was thinking whether or not that this piece was written as a satire or poking fun of her partner.
No, I think she was genuinely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she's genuinely impressed that her partner can like feed her scrambled eggs. And this is a bit I also love when she's like, my partner somehow knew how to put like a pillow under my arm or something like that, you know? When I was breastfeeding, I was like, I cannot believe this woman. Like, my take is actually
the fact that this woman, sad as well. It's also very
sad. The fact that this woman is like writing a whole article about how amazing her boyfriend's defrosting ability is. I think it just speaks volumes to the fact that a lot of women, they don't have even this kind of basic support. So that's why this woman thinks that, oh, it's worthy of saying, because like my boyfriend fed me a couple of meals while I just went through the most horrifying, traumatic 24 hours of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I have to nurse this person. Just the fact that she is kind of like heralding and celebrating these actions, these very minor actions, you know, these actions that women do every single day. The fact that she has to celebrate it in this piece means that it's number one, it's very unusual for her boyfriend to cook for her.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see the picture on the in the article, there's a picture of selfie, yeah, that they take the woman and her partner and her boyfriend. I can't stand women who say boyfriend about their partners. It's just like, get a life. Are you 14? And then her baby, like they have a selfie in the mirror, and the guy just looks like a freaking, you know, NRL kind of jock, kind of douchebag. Honestly, he looks like a cranbrook private school boy, eastern suburbs douchebag, which holds, like, it tracks with everything that she's saying in the article, where she's like, I didn't ask him to cut the pasta into pieces. Like, that is the most amazing thing that this guy has done for her. Like, that just, like, actually shows me how, like, little this guy does for her, and the fact that she has to, you know,
write an article which will be published internationally to be read by millions of people to praise this.
Yeah, this tiny action, like, wow. And stick a pillow under my arm as I switched boobs. Like, wow, mate, you're like, what? This, the fact that you think that this, your boyfriend, your partner deserves a gold medal just for doing that. Oh my God. I loved Clementine Ford's take on this. It was fucking spot on, honestly. But also, like you said, it's sad because, for this to have been something that this woman felt worthy of celebrating. I guess, and the fact that the editor and a bunch of editors had green-lighted this piece says to me that a lot of women don't even have this basic, the most basic kind of form of support that any human partner of any woman who had just given birth can provide. It kind of reminds me of a friend of mine who had a child maybe a year ago, and she said that when she started meeting up with her with the women in her mother's group, she was like, wow, my partner, who just like basically does the bare minimum, or like kind of like looks after me in the way that someone should, she said it just makes him look like a god. The fact that she's hearing like women who are like saying, oh, my husband can't change diapers, my husband can't do this. She was like, I cannot believe this is still a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about that, and I guess that's why this piece, as hilarious and embarrassing as it is for the writer, is also like quite revelatory in the sense that it shows how, like, still in the 50s, we're still stuck in the, like, how little men need to do in order to be absolutely given the biggest slap on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost as if that they are given awards or doing things that is just basic. I mean, you don't see her. Would she even write a piece if her mother was there that day, or her sibling were there that day and giving her all these supports? Would she just think, it's just normal. My mom's doing this for me, or my sibling's doing this for me. She doesn't see it as a very general thing to do to support a woman who has just given birth. She treats it as a romantic gesture, which is not bad as well. But what I'm saying is that it's also, you don't have a really high expectation of your partner. And it also shows that she was surprised that he knows how to do those things, because maybe he never done it before.
He knows how to cook. He knows how to clip pasta into tiny pieces. Wow.
A 5-year-old knows how to do that.
Wow. Yeah. But maybe the fact that he had done this, and for her to think this is magical, is the fact that so many women around her and their partners, their male partners, perhaps they don't, they wouldn't know how to do this?
Yeah, that's one thing. And also I don't think it gives credit to him, okay? I think if you try to look at this piece of article in a positive way, is that perhaps she is trying to inspire possibly male readers to do the same for their partners. Or she just simply had a very lower expectation of what a man should be doing. Because like I said, would she write a piece saying that how much a person loves her, for example, what I said, her mother who was there to look after her, to, you know, put pillows under her arms, or would she do the same? Would she do literally do the same, saying that, oh, I feel the love from my mom. She was helping me breastfeeding. You know, she was cutting linguinis into pieces and feeding.
Yeah, no, of course she wouldn't.
Doing the same.
No.
But because it's
the fact that,
period, and because she had just given birth, and because her boyfriend, her partner, happened to be there, she felt that she needed to compliment him publicly. Is a bit ridiculous in my own perspective.
I feel so embarrassed for her and her partner. But like, also kind of like, in a way that
you even cooked the pasta. She was still, the sad thing is that she was still fucking cooking at the moment.
To the point,
was still, had gone into a contraction. I'm like, geez, woman.
Can I just say also, she does say in the middle, she said while she was pregnant heavily, she was filling her days, this is her line, filling my days following granular batch cooking recipes in an attempt to silence the screaming voices that told me I was about to blow up my life. Instead of panicking, I cooked and cooked. So she does say like cooking for her was like just a way of dealing with what the kind of emotions that she was going through, which I kind of like, I totally respect. Like, I sometimes just feel like cooking or baking because like it is literally something that I enjoy doing for fun. I probably don't cook for fun. I bake for fun, but I don't cook for fun, I have to say. Sometimes I feel like cooking because like for whatever reason, we've had a lot of things during the week and we've eaten out a lot. And so one night I might be like, okay, let's eat in, let's, you know. But like I don't think I cook for fun. I think I bake for fun. I think baking is very therapeutic for me. So that's kind of the same or different. It's such a funny article. And, you know, I just love Clementine Ford and her reaction to it. It was fucking like just the best.
I don't know. I had a different interpretation to you when I was reading how she cooked. It felt like she was trying to cook to prepare the next 3 months that no one else would cook. And then she had to stuff everything in freezer and then heat it up when she wants to eat it.
You're saying she was prepping for the
fact that exactly. And I know so many women does that because they know that once they've given birth, the whole functionality of the household dies because apparently their partner, the male partner, cannot do any shit.
Yeah. Helen's big sigh.
That's why when we go back to the first two articles I was talking about, that's exactly the reason that woman doesn't want to get married. Have kids. Men are the problem. You got a question.
You know, Helen, there were other like romantic moment columns. Did you read any of the other ones?
I haven't
either, because I cannot stand people like just like
talking about
writing, talking about romance. And it's often just generic shit like that. I hate people who like boast about their romantic accomplishments. It's just like, I hate it. And especially the use of the term boyfriend.
But you like to watch rom-coms.
I love rom-coms,
because
they're not real. I don't know, just something about the use of the word boyfriend really rubs me off the wrong way. If you're like an adult woman, I don't know, I don't get it. Like I've been
it kind of signifies that you're you're either bi or you're cisgendered coming from?
I don't know. I really don't know why. But like, I don't know why it rubs me off the wrong way so much, because like, there's nothing actually like,
what about
like ontologically wrong with it? You know, like, yes, he is a boy, and yes, he is your boy. He's my partner and boyfriend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, so before Gia Tolentino came out with her book Trick Mirror in 2019, and I know I'm obsessed, you know, listeners will know I'm fucking obsessed with Gia and everything she does. And before her book came out in 2019, I'd been reading Gia's work for years and years. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that she had always mentioned her partner and in her face and in her Instagram posts as her partner. Like she always used the word term partner.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she came out with her book, in her essays, she referred to her partner, Andrew, as my boyfriend. And I was like, okay, what happened? Like, I don't know why she changed the label. I was like, maybe it's because, okay, like, she wanted to just broadcast the fact that she's straight.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. I think so. I guess that's – I don't know if that's a very – important aspect, but I think that is something to signify your preference,
maybe. Yeah,
because how would you feel if a guy who is writing the same piece and he wrote about boyfriend, how would you feel? Like,
oh, you mean like if it was a gay couple?
It was a gay couple.
Oh, I think I would not be so irritated.
Yeah.
Something about cis couples who use the term girlfriend, boyfriend that really irritates me. I don't know why.
You just hate cis couple at all.
Yeah, I just hate myself.
Okay, anything else more?
No, it's just hilarious. And I'm still going to try and figure out why I have this irritation with the term.
Okay, that's the end of our episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google and Apple, and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support what we do here at Asian Bitches Down Under, head to Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. So that's it from us this week. Anything else more?
No.
Yeah, okay.
We'll catch you guys next week.
Bye.